This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance? Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot radio show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to kboo.fm/silent dance parties.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not my
fear. What I do have the power to break the chains.
This is your host, Lisa Fay, with Right to Survive Radio. We here at Right to Survive are dedicating this show to all the houseless who have passed away over the last year, including James Bowen, a dreamer with the Right to Dream 2 community here in downtown Portland. From cities all across the East Coast to here in Oregon, a connecting thread of inadequate health care and housing are at the top of the root cause of houselessness. Right to Survive Radio had the opportunity to interview with people from coast to coast who are actively recognizing the countless homeless that lost their lives to the streets. Many alone, suffering, and downtrodden. Remembered with memorials that not only honor their memory, but also remember that they were human beings, someone's friend or loved one.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And in today's segment, we're in a three-part series on homeless and health care. And we're in Eugene, Oregon today on Ground Zero talking with Houseless Advocate, Opportunity Village, and Sleeps. Today I'm going to ask you to say your name, and I'm with
Jean Stacy.
Jean Stacy, how long have you been active in the houseless community?
For me, it began with the Occupy movement, so it's about a year and a half now.
In your endeavors with active in the houseless community, How many people you know that have proper health care?
Virtually no one. We have a few folks who do have Oregon Health Plan if they've gotten on disability. But other than that, for most part, they're without health care.
Having an intricate part in Sleeps and Opportunity Village, how is that coming along?
The Opportunity Village is moving along finally. After many months of dragging their feet, the City Council has finally starting to solidify our chance to have a piece of land. I've been more active in Sleeps recently, which is just an activist group. And we formed Sleeps, frankly, because we were mad at the city for not moving ahead with Opportunity Village, but as a board member there, we felt that our behavior there wasn't particularly activist appropriate.
The city did approve with Sleep's request and all your protests of Opportunity Village, and they did approve land for you all. Am I correct?
They've approved land. They have not yet, ironically, approved the concept yet, but we think that they will.
And from regulation that you all is putting pressure on the city to hurry up and let y'all do something with this land because the rainy season is coming in, the cold weather, and people get sick. Is that correct?
It should have been open this last winter. However, it wasn't. We're hoping now it'll be open for next winter. What Sleeps is working for is a lift or modification of our sleeping or camping bans in addition to Opportunity Village.
And the reason why I'm trying to connect it is because people in the streets have poor health, right?
Very poor health. That's one of the reasons that I'm very involved with the overall single-payer health care.
I know you all do a memorial for people that live on the street that's not with us anymore. And how did that come about that you all do this memorial?
There's a group that sprang out of Occupy called the Homeless Solutions Support Group, and they decided to do a memorial for those who had passed, who had been living on the streets at the time they passed. And we put up flowers and had reading of the names by one of the local ministers on the first anniversary of Occupy, because so many of us became friends with people who were unhoused through Occupy. The day after we had our memorial service, the city tore down the memorial. So we had to erect it again, which we did. And then recently we got another 28 names of the people who had died last year. So now it's a two-year memorial of 40-some-odd names there.
And how do y'all come about this count?
How did we begin to do them?
I mean, how do y'all get this? You say 40. How do y'all arrive at that count?
Well, we have to rely on police statistics. Whenever possible, even the unhoused, they'll give an address because, of course, they don't want it known that people who die are people who've been abandoned by everybody.
Have anybody ever came to you and said, I haven't heard from my uncle or seen my nephew or my son is missing, and that's when you all find, do y'all go look for him? Or if you know of anybody, do y'all go to that person?
What is more likely is that bodies are found and we have to go find someone who knows that person. I talked to a young woman recently whose father was moved. He wasn't here in Eugene, but he was in Oregon. Her father was moved 5 times in one night, wound up in the hospital and died that night.
Do y'all ever notify, how would you know to notify any family members or anything, or do you just take that picture and put it up on that memorial and hope people come by and see it?
It varies. Eugene is a small town, and we have numerous communities of the unhoused. So most people are part of a community, and people are pretty quickly identified, unless they're people who are traveling.
And do you have a specific place, a yearly, once a day each year that you set aside for people to pay their respect, or is it an ongoing thing?
It's both. Previously, we've done it just once a year, right around the new year. There's a service, and they ask all the family and friends of people who did pass from the streets to come. But now we're also doing more periodic refreshing of the memory and of the memorial at the City Hall. We have a City Hall which has been closed and is sitting empty, and that's where the memorial is.
So what plans are you doing or your organization doing to lower the number of death rates that's happening in the city? on the streets.
Right. Well, what SLEEPS is doing, SLEEP stands for Safe, Legally Entitled Emergency Places to Sleep. And our first focus is trying to just let people be left alone by the police at night. That once they go to bed, the police do not wake them up, because if they're sleeping, they're not breaking a law. So we say, please let them sleep from 9 to 6. We're trying to get the code changed. We picked sleeping because, as you well know, so many people are so fearful and put off by those who are unhoused. And we felt sleep was a common factor, that everybody understands that everybody has this common need. So that's why we're focusing on sleep, plus just the dysfunction if you don't get a good night's sleep.
So you think that having people get a good night's sleep would lower the death rates of people dying on the streets?
I think it definitely would. So often people are awakened in the middle of the night. It's pouring down rain. We have a case coming up the 19th of this month in court here in Eugene, a young man who was awakened from a dead sleep, got up, had to move. He went, crawled in a sleeping bag somewhere else, soaking wet, of course, and then he had to go into the hospital. So not only does it result in very bad health, but if the community wants to be practical, it was very expensive once that policeman decided to move that young man, because the city had a very large hospital bill in addition to the man himself suffering so much.
If people are getting the proper medical care and the proper rest, that would lower the death rates. I mean, we can't never tell when it's time for them to return, but we can at least lessen that return, right?
We can provide at least the safety of being able to sleep warmly, dryly. We have something wonderful here called Occupy Medical, which is totally free medical service that comes out of the Occupy movement, doctors, nurses, medical technicians. So they can do a lot to help people cure. But keeping people from getting sick in the first place is certainly based on a solid night's sleep and a little bit of food.
So what do you do about people who refuse to come utilize that service, who like staying in that area, who stay under the bridges or in the bushes or in cars and won't utilize those services? How do you get them to take care of themselves so they won't be found dead in a car or in a sleeping bag?
Well, here in Eugene, we have extraordinarily strict sleeping laws. We have 1,500 people who will not fit in any shelter. So those are people that have to sleep outside. There's absolutely no legal place for them to sleep. So even if they're trying very hard to be very responsible, trying to sleep in their car, for instance, they can't, because the police will arrest you for being in your own legally parked car asleep. So no matter how responsible they are and how hard they try, society is actually waking them up and making their lives much more endangered.
Are you reaching out to the public about how many people a year down the streets of Eugene?
Yes, we are. People are shocked to know, particularly that there's so many women and children. I think we're shocked equally by the men, but we're more used to that as a concept. But people are very, very surprised. They're very surprised that society has made so many rules to make it so difficult for those who are unhoused to live a stable life so that they can, in fact, get back off the street if that's their choice.
Okay, and you brought up an interesting thing. Have you found children that died on the street? And if so, how many?
I don't know the exact number. We actually have a little bit of programs here for children. But at the beginning of this winter, the winter of 2012, we had 42 families that were on a waiting list with no shelter whatsoever.
Do you know if you find more men on the streets that have passed than women, or vice versa, or about equal?
I was surprised at how many women had passed as well. Well, the women are even more vulnerable, as you know, because they are more vulnerable, particularly to predators and violence.
And the city is showing no inkling that they're going to reach out and help this problem that's rising due to people who never been on the streets before and due to lack of shelter.
Right. So many people now have worked all their lives, and something cataclysmic happens, and they're out on the street. So they're totally unprepared to be out there. And we see individual citizens wanting to reach out. We see government wanting to squash and to make things very difficult. I think all city governments have this fantasy that if they take care of people and provide basic survival care, that they'll become a mecca for those who are unhoused and be like a magnet, and all the unhoused from all over the world will come to live in Eugene, which is a total fallacy.
So do once a year, do you put things publicly, like in the local newspaper or local news channel, and say it's going to be a memorial service for people, and do people come to see if loved ones or anything?
We do. We also post the names so that people, sometimes people don't know that their friends or their relatives have even passed. And we have a ceremony at a place called the Wow Hall, which is normally an entertainment venue. But it's a good, solid place right in the core of the downtown where so many of our folks live. And it's always very well attended.
Can you tell us some of the names of the organizations that helping you with this course on getting this out to the public, that how many people is dying on the streets, and to reach out to families who have missing members?
Sure. There is a local minister who has an informal organization, and he does a lot of the work for this. We also have the Community Alliance of Lane County, who's been very involved with the unhoused. Sleeps is involved now. We have a wonderful group here called Interfaith Occupy that's been very involved both with health care and the unhoused, and of course those two abut frequently. Church Women United has been very involved, and of course Opportunity Village, and now Sleeps.
How do you feel when somebody tell you or you hear that they found somebody on the street that have passed? How do that make you feel?
It just seems like such a lonely way for people to have to pass. Elena, my partner, and I had a very good friend for about 8 years. His name is Two Hat Terry, who lives on the streets in Eugene. And we're in Bolivia a lot of the year. We live down there about half the year. And we were very sad to get a phone call and know that Terry, whom we did accompanied through so many illnesses and so many good times.
Well, thank you for this interview. This is Ibrahim Mubar from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. And in this segment, on a three-part series we call "To Help in a Houseless Community." And I'm in Philadelphia right now, and my guest is...
Hi, I'm Rob Robinson from the Take Back the Land movement, and I work with an organization, a human rights organization in New York called NESRI, the National Economic and Social Rights Initiative.
So you're from New York, yes?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and... why are you here in Philadelphia?
Well, I'm here at the National Planning Committee for the next U.S. Social Forum, but it's an opportunity to meet face-to-face with some people around the country doing some dynamite work and really working with people who are working in communities of color around issues that are important to me and the organizations that I'm connected to.
You're a houseless advocate, and you're formerly houseless, right?
Yeah, so I was on the streets of Miami for 2.5 years and spent 10 months in a New York City homeless shelter. So, yeah, you could say I'm passionate about those issues.
Okay. In your 2 years and your 10.5 months in the houseless community and now being a houseless advocate, how is the health insurance or the better health for all in the houseless community in New York?
So it's a problem. As we know, it's a problem nationwide. There are some services on the streets in New York City, but it's certainly not enough. And we see people coming up with chronic health issues because they're exposed to the elements. In New York, you know, it's only warm in the summer. The rest of the year, you're challenging the elements, and that's difficult on people. People with high rates of asthma, people getting diabetes because they don't have access to good food. You know, they're suffering all types of health issues that, you know, and adequate health care isn't being delivered on the streets. When you go into the hospitals, you can't receive adequate health care because you don't have insurance. So it's problematic, and it's an ongoing problem.
Mm-hmm. So when they don't receive that proper insurance or that health care, people, let's put it bluntly, let's say it pass away.
Well, people start to get chronic health issues, right? And those issues compound themselves. And eventually people die on the streets. It doesn't show a lot of love or care for humankind. We have to find a way to come and support our brothers and sisters. Just because you're poor, just because you're houseless or homeless, whatever you want to call it, doesn't mean you don't deserve health care. You're a human being. By the fact that you're a human being, there are certain needs that you have. And those needs need to be met by obligations of government and corporate community.
Okay. And what do you do, or what happens when they find people dead on the street? What is your organization, or you do per se, for that?
In New York City, it's a challenge, because if we can't identify those folks, the city will hold that body at a morgue for about 30 days, and then they get buried on an island in New York City called Hart Island. You get buried in a mass grave without any identification. Nobody, if your loved ones are eventually looking for you and want to identify you, they can't, because you're in a mass grave. So there's a group in New York that I was formerly a part of called Picture the Homeless that holds a homeless memorial every December 21st, which is recognized as the longest day of the year, and it sort of represents the trials and tribulations that a houseless person goes through, right? It is, every day is a long day of the year for a homeless person, right? They don't have the security of tenure. They don't have a roof over their head. And besides that, a house is more than a roof, right? It's a sense of community. It's a sense of health care. It's a sense of, you know, having your community to support you. These folks don't have that. These chronic ailments add up. Eventually, folks end up on the street dead. You know, in some instances, there's some intervention, and you can identify folks if you're lucky enough to find somebody who knows that individual, but many times they're on. To complicate things in the city, when you get buried on this island, it is run by the Department of Corrections in New York City, and it doesn't give you easy access. So if you eventually find out that maybe your loved one was buried there, you can't go visit them. At least it was that way one time. Picture the Homeless organized and fought for that and changed that situation to allow access to people buried in mass graves. And now, you know, they do a memorial once a year where they take people out to Hart Island and just have a memorial for everybody that was buried there without identification.
Can you tell us the count of people that y'all had last year, on how many houseless people that died on the streets?
So the official count by HUD, which is Housing and Urban Development, they demand that all continuums of care around the country do what is called a HOPE count. That HOPE count, as of last year, this year's numbers haven't been calculated. It's done on the last Monday in January every year. Last year was just slightly over 3,000 people that the government counted. However, we think that number is flawed, because New York is very cold on the last Monday in January. So what about the people that are living down underground in the subways? What about people that have found a bank lobby? You're not counting those people. If you were to change that HOPE count to the last Monday in July when people surfacing, you'd get a truer number. So while that number 3,000 sounds like a lot, it's still problematic, because it's not a true calculation. There are homeless advocates in New York that would estimate that the same number of people in shelter, which is about 50,000 a night in New York City, are on the streets homeless in New York City.
My goodness. And we thought Portland was bad. I don't know.
It's a problem. It's a problem around the country, and it's a problem that needs to be addressed, because we're not getting at the systemic problems or the root causes of homelessness. By putting people in shelters, you're only warehousing them, and that doesn't get at the root cause of the problem.
So do you blame this because on that it's not universal health care around, if it was met, if it was universal health care, whether you're rich, homeless, middle class, or what, you'll be getting better health care and people be living longer that's on the street?
Absolutely. I think everybody is just for, again, as to reiterate, for the very fact that you're a human, you deserve health care. And we have to find a way in this country to bring true health care. The most advanced country in the world can't provide universal health care for all of its residents. Government has an obligation and needs to honor that obligation. So, you know, it will continue that people are laying on the streets homeless, but that doesn't solve our problem. We need to address the root causes of homelessness, allow people access to good health care, and this problem will disappear.
Now, in your memorial, do y'all have like a war veterans memorial wall with people's names on it, or pictures, or you just have unmarked spots and people just come pray and do service and give?
In New York, it's an unmarked grave, but we had traveled, members of our organization had traveled to Budapest, Hungary in 2009 when I was with Picture the Homeless, and we actually saw an area where homeless people are identified with those particular markings. So we were honored to see that, and we, taking our lead, they identified people in Budapest, Hungary, and created such a wall. We're hoping to create such a wall on Hart Island in New York. It hasn't been done yet. It's going to take raising some money. It's going to take fighting the entities that don't allow it. But, you know, the challenge is on, and we're working to make that happen in New York.
So then when a family member haven't seen a loved one for, let's say, 6 months or a year, you all just say, well, you know, maybe they in Hart Island.
Absolutely. We hold this mass memorial every year. It's usually in March or April. And we bring anybody who thinks that they know somebody who may be buried on that island, somebody they think is lost. So we sort of grieve together. It's sort of shared grieving. People are coming together around the same issue and grieving together. It's really a difficult situation, but it does give the opportunity that wouldn't be afforded otherwise. You lost a loved one, or you think you may have lost a loved one. How do we celebrate that loved one's life? You know, it's some grieving, we're hurting inside, but we come together and we share that, and it's a human ritual, a very human service, and we try to bring a little respect and dignity to the homeless every year with that memorial.
Thank you very much for your help on this homeless memorial and bringing attention that homeless people, houseless people are humans too, and they need Medicare, and it's harder on the streets living in the elements than it is in houses, and that's why people are falling dead on the street. Thank you much for your work. Any last thing you'd like to say?
Just thanks for having me. It's always great to have an outlet to explain the human side of homelessness. You know, a lot of times people are identified as if they're non-human when you're homeless, but these are people too. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you much.
This is Ibrahim Mubar for Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio down in Portland, Oregon. And we go to Ground Zero in the houseless community, interviewing people about houseless issues. And today we're in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I'm here with
Reverend Bruce Wright of Refuge Ministries and the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign.
Are you homeless or have been homeless and you're an advocate for houseless people?
Yes, I'm an advocate for houseless people, and I have been both couch homeless and street homeless. Currently couch homeless, sleeping on my brother's recliner, but I've been sleeping on different couches and recliners, so, and have slept in my car before when I did have one.
And so we're at a gathering in Philadelphia at the U.S. Social Forum. And why are you here, and what issues are you interested in addressing?
Well, I'm most concerned about the issue of poverty and homelessness in our country, particularly housing rights issues. And I believe it's long and overdue for this society, and particularly those in power, the corporate elites and government, to recognize the right to housing, that it is a human right, in fact.
And what do the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, what do they do?
Well, we are uniting poor and homeless folks around the whole entire country around issues of the right to housing, the right to health care, the right to a living wage job, the right to not be harassed simply because of your economic status. And through my work with the campaign, as well as my work locally in the Tampa Bay area of Florida, which is where I'm from, with Refuge Ministries, we fight for people's rights, particularly the homeless community. Lots of issues are happening in our state, where I'm from, in Florida, where homelessness is being criminalized and where hate crimes are prevalent against the homeless.
And I'm glad you said numerous of things, you a whole artillery on things that PPAC does, and one of them was health care. Can you tell me about the health care system here in Philadelphia for the houseless people?
Well, I can tell you both about the health care system here and in Florida, and both are appalling. What little there exists of county health programs are being eliminated or greatly reduced. And to get into the so-called Medicaid, Medicare system, you have to jump through so many hoops. Most people can't navigate their way to get that, if it is even available to them. So we have a very appalling state of health care in both Philadelphia and where I'm from in Tampa Bay, the whole state of Florida. as well as Pennsylvania.
Okay. And in that, if people living on the streets, in the elements, you're dealing with snow, cold, rain, sunny, poor health, and their condition of survival is a percentage lower than people living in housing.
Well, yes. A lot of people don't realize that parts of our country are really large swaths of our country, including where we're in right now, Kensington, resembles what we see in developing or so-called third world nations. It isn't just abroad. It's here in our own country. I mean, we have 50% of America at or below the poverty line now, and the United States ranks absolute last among developed nations when it comes to health care and housing.
So why you think that is? This being the richest country in the world, and it's the people that live here, stay here, don't have no health care?
In a word, greed. Pharmaceutical companies, as well as the privatized health care system, their bottom line is profit. So whatever it takes to make a profit, they're going to do that. They're not going to make profit off the poor. They're going to make profit off middle class, what there is left of that shrinking class, and certainly the wealthy. And when they do get medications to the poor, rather than giving, almost like what they've done in Africa, rather than giving generic forms, they in many cases are prescribing or, you know, working in cahoots with doctors to give, you know, pharmaceuticals that aren't at a generic price.
And so when a person's health fails and they become deceased, what do poor people economic human rights campaign do?
Well, one of the things is we advocate for them to be included in the Medicaid, Medicare system, and we advocate for the people that run the bureaucracy to make it more navigable, because the bureaucracy is not navigable at all. Secondly, we raise support when we have to help people with their health care issues.
So when they die, how do you all surround or be in solidarity?
Well, you know, we've had some comrades fall, both down in Florida in the last week and just last night here in Philly, one of the comrades with PPERC. In addition to offering emotional and spiritual and social support, what we try to do is we try to gather around them resources that they may need and really look to churches and other mosques and spiritual institutions to support working with people as they're grieving when loss happens.
And so when that loss happened, do you all set up a memorial then for the houseless people that passed away living on the street?
Yes, I can tell you down in Florida, I've been involved in every year the homeless memorial, where we recognize what I call the victims of the war on the poor. And I believe that we have an undeclared war in this country, and it's a war against poor people. It's almost a cuss word to use the P word, poverty. And you don't hear the two major parties talk about it at all.
So in doing this memorial in both Philadelphia and Tampa Bay, how do you all organize that and what do you all do?
Well, we organize with churches, grassroots groups, and people in the community. And every year a service happens that recognizes those who have fallen. And there's usually a lot of the outside world, if you will, people aren't aware of the problem, are invited. And so they get a new kind of personalized picture of homelessness. And so with that, we hope to get support and resources.
So do you all do a name count or face count or a numbers count, or you all just have like a wall of our comrades that's fallen, or do you just have a sign and say, come and show solidarity?
Well, I can speak for Florida. I'm not particularly Philly, how it's done up here, but in Florida, we have different members of the houseless community, homeless community, get up there and share the names of the fallen and their date of birth, their age. You know, we try to get everybody in there. We are acutely aware of who has passed away in St. Petersburg, which is the particular part of Tampa Bay that I'm from. And so we believe it's so important when we're able to recognize the names, because these are real names. These are real people. These are our mothers, our brothers, our sisters, our children, you know, our grandchildren, and it needs to be recognized.
Can you tell us the count of how many people died last year, or or yearly? I know it's, I'm hoping it's different, and I'm hoping it's less, but how many people died last year on the street?
Well, I can tell you in Philly it numbers in the hundreds, and in the Tampa Bay area the same would be true. It's almost like it is a war. You and I were talking earlier about the brother who shared with you about New York that 3,000 died. And when you think about that, for instance, that's the same amount that died in the World Trade Center. You know, but there's no recognition of those people. And they're fallen casualties of a war as well. Not the war on terror, although it is a kind of terror. It's called poverty. And those are the casualties.
And last but not least, are y'all fighting to bring this recognition to City Hall so they can have the houseless people being taken better care of or doing something?
Oh, yeah, consistently. In fact, in Florida, we're planning an action on May Day, which is International Workers' Rights Day and Human Rights. And we plan on bringing demands to City Hall, and we plan on encouraging City Hall to be accountable. In fact, we're holding them accountable. Because any homeless person that's died on the streets, that city in which they died is accountable. They are complicit in their death.
And they just allowing us to die, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like a silent war, really. As I said, a war on the poor, and the casualties are paralleling any war in the country, or in other countries. And in fact, if you were to number all the homeless nationwide, we're talking tens of thousands that have died because of health reasons or because of being victimized criminally.
All right. Thank you very much, Reverend Bruce, and I wish you many luck. And any one last thing you'd like to say to the listening audience?
Well, I'd like to say, for those who want to look at it a different way, this is a deeply spiritual issue. Jesus said, when you do it to the least of these, you do it to me. So anytime a homeless person is dying, it's like crucifying Jesus all over again. And so those who are from the Christian perspective, Christian faith, I would encourage you to realize that it's a mandate to be in solidarity with the poor, and that that's where the heart of the kingdom of God really is.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And in this segment, we in the houseless community in Eugene, Oregon. Our topic is three-part series on homeless and health care. This month's topic is talking about the memorial that East City gives for the homeless people that's living in the streets. And today I'm here in Eugene, Oregon with
Michael Kerrigan with Community Alliance of Lane County, also doing advocacy work for the unhoused here in Lane County, working closely with SLEEP as well.
Can you tell them what SLEEPs are?
Well, SLEEPs is a group that came together a few months back to take direct action to advocate for the unhoused here in Eugene and Springfield. What was happening, people were talking about helping the homeless, the unhoused, but not enough was happening. So we decided we needed to put pressure on the city, pressure on the county to do something, to take action, not just talk about helping the unhoused, but actually doing something that would help the folks living on the streets of Eugene and Springfield.
And you also doing something called Opportunity Village?
Yeah, Opportunity Village is going to be a homeless village based on what's happening in Portland with Dignity Village and R2D2. And we have a location, and we have a commitment from the city to actually create this Opportunity Village, but they're moving so slowly that we had hoped to have something for this winter. It's probably not going to happen. The wheels of bureaucracy move oh so slowly. So we've been putting pressure on them to step up, get city council to pressure the staff to move quicker than they are, and we're excited about having something in place, but probably not until this spring.
Now, to my knowledge, the city of you approved a site for Opportunity Village, correct?
Yeah, they have. It's at Garfield and 2nd in Eugene. Fortunately, this past week, they made a map of the site about where the tents and houses will go. So we are actually gratified that we have something in writing, something, a map that we can base our work on. We are actually moving forward with coming up with a vetting process for those who are going to be in the village based on what, you know, folks folks in Portland have done, it's going to be something that's going to be an example, I think, to the rest of Oregon and the rest of the U.S.
Now, you all was trying to get the city to move faster because you knew the winter month was coming, the rainy season, the cold weather, and that's where houseless people suffered the most.
Yeah, we really wanted something in place this winter because it would save lives. When it's cold and rainy, people are going to die out in the streets. That's one reason we set up a memorial on Old City Hall with the names of the unhoused who've died in Eugene over the past few years. We just needed to send the message to the city. It's not about, oh yes, we'll do this program and that. It's about people living and dying. And that demands action, demands a city just moving quicker. They're not going to move quicker unless we're putting the pressure on. That's one reason why we have this memorial.
How long have you been doing this memorial for houseless?
I think we've been doing about 4 months, you know, give or take a few weeks. When we first did it, we first put it up, the city took it down that the next morning it was gone.
I mean, how many years?
Well, how many years? Well, this is just over the past year.
Really?
Yeah, this is new because we just felt it's just the city was just sweeping the, you know, the homeless problem just under the rug. And so it was an attempt to put a human face to it. Because that's the challenge, is that people, oh, the unhoused, they have these stereotypes that we wanted. There's pictures, there's names. It's real people who are out in the streets. It's real people who are dying. Someone's brother, someone's sister, someone's father, someone's mother. And the memorial now, they keep that up. And the reason they keep it up now is we went to the press. We went to the faith community is with us on this. And the city's now realizing that, whoa, okay, this is something that is, you know, we can't tear down anymore.
Can you calculate about how many people have died within this past year?
You know, I don't know the exact number. My friend Gene State will know that. I know it's been significant. Definitely, I think, over 40 folks over the past few years. But Gene will know the exact number. But the key thing is, it's there. People are dying, and people are still dying on. There's a homeless person, unhoused person, a few weeks ago was added to the list who died out on the streets. So, you know, it's ongoing, and we want it to stop.
How do you all come about getting this count?
Well, oftentimes it'll be in the newspaper. We'll check with the police or talk to some of the social service agencies who are involved in helping the unhoused. We'll get the information from a variety of sources.
And these are the people that you can be accountable for, but do you think it's more houseless people that have died that no one know about or anything?
Well, I think because of the organizing work that we're doing, I don't think there's people dying, you know, out there in the streets or in the park that folk don't know about. Because we've been going to, and Gene Stacy especially and others, going to the, you know, the breakfast that the First Christian Church has every other Sunday and talking and hearing. So the communication channels are there. We don't think it's in Lane County, or at least in Eugene, you're going to have people just, you know, dying out there without anybody knowing about it. So the network is developing. It's stronger, it's cohesive, and we know what's going on.
Do people come to you, like family members or friends, and say, hey, have you seen my uncle or my grandfather or nephew or brother or cousin?
I personally haven't, you know, had that experience. But I imagine at the breakfast, you know, or the dinners, you know, when people are sitting down and talking, I think that's where the information is shared. But there's, you know, others in the movement down here are doing that more directly than I am. But we are listening, we're talking, and so that the movement is getting that. The information is there, and we're sharing it with others.
What plans are you all doing to lower this death rate of houseless people?
Well, we are pushing the city of Eugene to decriminalize homelessness so people camp safely, and we want there to be toilets, we want there to be trash receptacles so people can come out of the shadows so they can be in places where they're safe, where they know that, you know, they have their friends and allies near them so they don't have to fear that they're going to be out by themselves in dangerous places. Step one is make it legal to sleep in the city of Eugene and Springfield as well.
What about getting better health care for the houseless people?
That's the issue of health care, something important to everybody in this country. Obviously the unhoused, but also working families too. So we need health care for all in the state of Oregon. So we're going to be involved in that movement on the state level to get guaranteed health care, guaranteed health insurance, because that's why people are dying, whether they're unhoused or housed. If they can't, you know, treat their health problems, people get sick, they die. That's got to stop. We will be working on that as well.
You know, organizations that's going around this country following after the Homeless Bill of Rights, Rhode Island Homeless Bill of Rights, do you all know or aware of that?
Yeah, I think that what Rhode Island is doing is great, and California is thinking of a Homeless Bill of Rights, but also Oregon is thinking about Portland, we've been told, and allies are going to be working, getting it on the state level, maybe this year or next year. And we are going to be involved in that process as well, because it's critical that the unhoused have their rights, have their Bill of Rights, because they are, you know, they're just being pushed in the shadows. Police here are waking folks up in the middle of the night. I think they're violating their rights. People have a basic right to a safe place to sleep.
Can you tell us some of the names of the organizations that are helping this cause of getting people off the street, helping houseless people get proper medical, and doing that count of people and making it aware to the public that people are dying on the street?
Well, there's a broad coalition of people working on the issue. The group I work with, Community Alliance of Lane County, is part of the coalition working on the issue. Of course, Sleeps, of course, is doing it, but also you have social service agencies involved as well. St. Vincent's de Paul, their Looking Glass. The Lane County was the one who coordinated the recent homeless count that we did. People working for the City of Eugene and Springfield. So it's really a variety of organizations coming together to make life a better life for those who are unhoused in Lane County.
Any of city officials, like the commissioners or the mayor, jumping on the bandwagon to curb this drastic situation?
Yeah, we have a new city councilor, Greg Evans. At his first meeting, after we had a bunch of folks, unhoused folks, in-house folks, you know, testifying before the council about the need for the city to do something to help the unhoused, he spoke up and said, yeah, let's do a work session at dealing with the problem of that sleeping was a crime. So his first meeting, you know, he just went, stood up and said, work session, and we got other councilors to support that. The problem now is that the city manager is moving so slowly to schedule this work session that we're going to do an email campaign, we're going to be testifying next week. Once again, we got to put the pressure on them to do the right thing. But new councilor Greg Evans, boy, his first meeting, stood up and said, we got to do something, and we're really happy about that.
And when is this houseless memorial? What month does it take place and where?
Well, the houseless memorial is ongoing. It's up right at the old city hall as we speak. So it's groups like Sleeps and CALC, but the faith community is also involved in it. So we had a ceremony a few weeks back to put some new names up there, and we'll do that again, but we make sure it is maintained. We put fresh flowers on there, and we respect those who have died on the streets and make sure that memorial stays up, but that it's something that people are going to come by, wow, look, I didn't, you know, realize that many folks had died, and whoa, those flowers. It's a proud statement to what the community can do by saying, yes, the unhoused should not be dying on the streets.
All around me are familiar faces, worn out places, worn out faces, bright and early for their daily races, going nowhere, going nowhere.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial here in Portland, Oregon. And in today's show, we're in a three-part segment about the health care in the houseless community. And we're talking about memorials for homeless people in different cities. And today I'm here with
Jeannie Laura.
Jeannie Laura, how long have you been active in the houseless community?
About 5 years now.
And have you ever been housed?
Yes, I have, for about 2.5 years.
And what's your work that you do in the houseless community?
Well, I currently work at Sisters of the Road, and I spend a lot of time working with other organizations, but right now I'm working on the Homeless Bill of Rights.
Now tell me, when you was out in the street, how was your health care provided?
I didn't have any health care, and nobody I knew had health care. We just went without.
So what do the people do when they get sick or hurt?
They die. I mean, we go to each other when we need help, but most of the time, you can't get an appointment even in a free clinic. So if your friends can't help you with something, you just lay out there and suffer.
So let me get this right. You're saying that people that's in the elements, in the rain, the snow, the sunshine, the cold, the wet, that they bound to get sick because they have no covering and they get no proper Medicare or anything?
No, they don't get any proper Medicare. Nobody really cares. I mean, you can go to an emergency room. That's about all you can do. Most of the time, they're going to give you a pill and send you right back out into the cold. unless you've got health insurance, you're not going to stay the night, not unless you're actually for sure dying right then. They're not going to allow you to stay the night. They're going to patch you up and send you out.
So when you get sick, when you was out there for the 2 years and you got sick, what did you do?
I prayed a lot that I'd make it through the night, but there was never. I would go to health clinics, and they would tell me, well, you could sit there all day. If we have an opening, we'll take you. Otherwise, we won't. So I went completely without any health care at all while I was on the streets. Once in a while, I'd get aspirin or Tylenol or maybe Vicks from a church, but that was about the health care that I was going to get.
Wow. So what do you know what other people do that live on the streets?
They go without. They pray for winning the lottery system so that they can get some medical benefits. But even then, it's basic care. It's not for emergency. It's just basic medical care. And a lot of folks on the street need more than that.
I did hear you mention early in this interview that when people get sick and they don't have proper health care, they die. What do you all do about that situation?
Well, besides being very hurtful that people die for needless reasons, we try to remember the fallen folks. There's always a memorial in our city. Every year there's a memorial. I can honestly say it's not enough. Just remembering folks is not enough when most of them died senselessly and needlessly. But a memorial to give all the silent folks recognition is definitely something that's very important. We all have to remember the people that struggled before us.
So when our comrades has fallen in the streets, and how do you gather information about them? Do you contact their family members, or tell us a little bit about how this happened?
Well, we do our best to contact family members, but there's a lot of times where folks on the streets don't have family, except the other street folks. We gather as much information from those folks as we can to try to find relatives, to try to find family. And we do the best we can to make sure that everybody in the community knows. But we do really work hard to see if we can find family and put these people to rest properly.
And can you tell the listening audience about where this memorial take place and what month, what time, what day?
Well, every year it's the Downtown Chapel in Portland, Oregon that hosts this service. It's usually done in March every year, but the day varies. They try to do it in the middle of the week, but the day varies. But it's usually always in March, and it's always run by the folks at the Downtown Chapel.
And I know this year it's going to be March 15th. I don't know what time, like you said. But how do you have, like, pictures of people or a list of names? Or do you just have a wall, like the war veterans or something? Or you just have that people just come that day at that time and just, you know, sit and do a moment of silence? Can you, you know, elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, we first try to find out what religion folks were so that they have the proper sending. If that means that we have 6 or 7 different types of ministers or priests, then that's what we do so that everybody has their own. But a lot of folks collect stuff from people, and we're always taking pictures of the folks on the streets. So there's usually always a picture of each person. Some people, there's memorabilia. People will make things from their heart. That way, if family shows up, we can give all those belongings to the family to show how loved those folks were.
How do you gather the name of the people? I mean, do people come and say, hey, Jenny, this person died, or what? How do you do that?
We have a lot of outreach folks that actually learn folks' names. We have churches and other organizations that when you come in for services, get their names. And so it's like a community. The community will work together. Even a description will help somebody in our community recognize that person. And that's how we go about it. It's a lot of recognition.
From March to March, you all take tally and count on the people that died. Do you know how many this year, well, for this memorial, how many people have died on the streets?
I don't have the exact count, but I do know it's over 60.
Oh, my goodness. 60 people in the city just don't care, or the hospitals, or they just falling by the wayside.
I think it's easy for folks to pretend that they're not there, because if you realize they're there, then you have to admit there's a problem. So I think it's easier for people to just push it under the rug and act like they don't exist.
Now work with me now. We're supposed to be the richest country, the best country, with the best medical and stuff here. And people here in this country are just dying because of what? I mean, people don't care if you're not in a certain social status?
In my opinion, unless you're one of that top 10%, you really don't matter much. And once they've gotten what they need out of you, then you don't matter at all.
So tell me this, is it a certain age, is it the older people? I mean, is it more older people that's dying, younger people, middle age, more women, more babies, or men, or any different ethnicity, or is it any kind of statistic or static on that?
I don't know if there's any statistics out there. I personally don't know. But as I've been watching, I believe it's just across the board poverty-stricken folks. It's the people that have the least that are suffering, and it doesn't, I think, across the board. Color, gender, none of that really matters. It's the low men on the totem pole that are suffering, and there's a lot of them.
Do they know what, is it just like natural causes or due to drug infliction causes or not just having the proper Medicare? Do you know, can you elaborate on that?
I believe it's a little bit of all of those. It's lack of shelter. Lack of keeping warm. People die because they get hypothermia. People do die because of drugs. They have no other alternative to take care of medical problems. I believe they die of lack of food. I believe they die of lack of medical care. And I believe that most of them, it's unnecessary.
And then when they do leave the walk and the living, how are they buried? Do the city take care of them or what? I don't know. You know, this is saddening and to hear and this heartbreaking. So how are they the ones that, you know, die? Who takes care of them? How are they taken care of?
I know that sometimes when we find family, family does. But I believe that the majority of them, I might be wrong, but I believe the majority of them, it's taken care of by the state. So therefore, you know, it's not dignified. That's why we have a memorial service, because there's not always a funeral we can attend. So we have to make sure that we send them off properly.
Well, we pray and hope that you continue your work. But in this aspect, we hope that your work lessened, because that means less people are dying. And this is the first time I ever asked that somebody's job get canceled. You know, because it's a sad thing when you can't live a life and you're dying because you can't get the proper attention. Do you have any other words, anything you want to say about the memorial that's happened in the houseless community?
Well, I'd like to say that it's important that every city does this. It's important that we remember people, and every one of them counted. It's important to remember how much they counted. And it's important to remember that a person like me would be glad to be out of a job when it comes to something like this if we could make the world better.
And an interesting question just popped up in my head. Have you known anyone that have passed, you know, and since you've been homeless or working in a houseless community?
In the last 5 years, I can honestly say at least 50 people that I knew personally from the streets have passed away because of poverty. If they had money, then they could have gotten the care or the help or the treatment that they would have needed. So I believe poverty has killed at least 50 folks that I know and loved.
Well, thank you for this interview, and I know this is some of the hardest interviews that I have, because people have connections and they know people. We would like to invite people to come to the St. Andre Bissett's
Chapel on the corner of 6th and Burnside.
And to give your condolences to the people that have fallen on the streets. Thank you, Jenny Law.
How sweet the sound.
Right to Survive was sickened, appalled, as well as overwhelmed and touched by what our guest had to say about how the houseless are treated and remembered in their cities. Suppressed and oppressed in life to unmarked urns and mass unmarked, mixed and dumping of human bodies as if life itself had no meaning and human beings are not here for a purpose. That when our time to leave this world arrives, what remains is to be treated like our garbage. Contained, sent to an island dump, out of sight and out of mind. It is with the love and dedicated commitment of our guest, Gene Stacy, Michael Carrigan, Reverend Bruce Wright, Rob Robinson, and Jeannie Lore that memorials remembering the houseless take place year after year. Parents, siblings, spouses, children, friends, and comrades whose names and memories live on in the hearts of communities. They have truly devoted, inspiring, and motivated people caring to make sure people are able to pay homage to those left behind and succumb to the streets.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 7:02. Coming up next is Hard Knock Radio.
KBOO Community Radio turns 45 this year, and our first 2013 membership drive starts on the 21st. Help make reaching our $99,000 fundraising goal a little easier by offering a matching donation of at least $500 for us to use on air during the drive. Matches are really great motivators to entice our non-contributing listeners to donate, so please email membership@kboo.org if you would like to offer a match or have any questions. Or call 503-231-8032 and ask for the membership department to plan your spring drive matching gift today.
Hugo Chavez, president of Venezuela, died last week, and hundreds of thousands of people poured into the streets to mourn him. Arguably the most influential leader in Latin America for over a decade, what will his legacy be? Join me, Linda Olson Osterlund, for a deeper look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. My guest is Miguel Tinker Salas, professor of Latin American Studies at Pomona College and author of The Enduring Legacy, Oil, Culture, and Citizenship in Venezuela. That's this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance? Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot radio show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to KBOO.fm/silent.